Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Hello and welcome back to the Not So Fit Couple podcast with your hosts, Lucy Haldon.
And Benjamin Haldon.
The Haldens.
We need an intro.
Yeah. What do you mean? Like a jingle. Like a jingle. We
bow,
say this
bow,
every...
Bow,
what have we got?
No.
That's not it.
Oh, we could do a beat with a tune though. How, what else have you got?
That's all.
Oh, wait, I don't have anything yet. I don't have anything.
You do the...
Can we
record that and that's going to come on every episode? We'll that's do, our new jingle. We've just created ourselves.
Please come. Oh God, what happened to my voice? Please.
This is the most chaotic. Yeah.
Please, please comment if we should create a jingle.
From that.
We could, you know how a lot of podcasts do actually have something at the start?
We'll
I think if
own.
We create our own, that's a little bit more unique.
The reason why, by the way, we're singing that is because me and Lucy watched The Joker again last night. What a movie that is.
Great movie.
In terms of how movies are filmed and actors.
Fantastic.
That was so well done. Like we were really, you know, sometimes when you're watching a film, but you're not watching it because you're also on your phone scrolling on social media. You don't do that with The Joker because you're watching the filming. He lost 52 pounds for that role. 52 pounds.
I didn't think he had 52 pounds to lose.
No, he was.
It's like, who else has done that in movies, though?
Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, in Dallas Buyers Club, right?
Yeah, and yeah, Christian Bale did it for... Was it The Pianist? No, I'm getting it wrong.
No, he did it for The Machinist.
Machinist.
Gained 70 pounds back, like, in, like, 6 months or something. Insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard going films.
It must be so difficult to do that, because for you to lose that amount of weight and get down to that weight is a lot of months or weeks eating next to nothing. And it's really hard to do that. And there must be also some really bad traits picked up from relationships with food and exercise just for that.
Yeah, I think Matthew McConaughey said that he was eating an apple a day, a handful of multivitamins, and then like a glass of wine or something. And that was it for like
months.
2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then all you would be thinking about is food 24/7.
I think what a lot of them say, because Matthew McConaughey really spoke about this in his book, you just become that character. So when you're even losing the weight, you are that character. So he became that guy. I forgot his name in Dallas Buyers Club. I can't remember what he's called. And then like the Joker, he became.
Yeah, Cal was talking about this morning.
And you become like psychologically very just in that role, like everything.
Yeah, method acting.
What did the Joker do? He even wrote the diary outside.
Yeah, apparently off.
So not the one who's in Batman. What's the actor's name in the actual Joker?
So Heath Ledger apparently was very similar. I think the Joker's quite an intense psychological role, so it might demand a lot from the people. But yeah, apparently Joaquin Phoenix, even off camera, was like talking like the Joker. He was writing a diary as the Joker throughout the days and like gave those out as like little mementos to the staff.
You can see how that would evolve into a thing, because even for example when I'm in the gym this morning listening to 50 Cent Window Shop, I pull my pants down a little bit and my phone comes up and I'm like, my window shop, I become 50 Cent just in the song. That's in 2 minutes.
Did that just give you the ear clues?
A little bit, yeah. What was that? He just
that's
kind
my
of
fake gun. Maybe I'm a window shop.
Yeah, but that's just not it. I don't think.
Look at Ben though.
Yeah, look at me.
Ben this morning, we were getting a picture. I was like, oh, let's get a nice picture. Ben refused to get a nice picture because his tattoo was on the wrong side.
Wait until I've got the other arm done, then we can get
tattooed
to the side.
I don't think a double arm is the one. I've been going back and forth.
Let's just see what 50 Cent's got, and then if he's got a double one, I've got to get a double one.
I think every part of his body is tattooed, so we're not going down that avenue or that route. I love the one. I think it looks lovely. And then when you get this bit done and have L-U-C-Y across your forearm, slapped there, I think it'll be even better.
That's already on. Just, I've got it in invisible ink.
Skin colour ink.
Thank you very much. Anyway, completely off topic today with what we just spoke about. Today's episode is all about how to PB.
For an event.
For an event.
Also, a big round of applause. Lisa Davis, 3 hour 5 marathon at the weekend.
That I got confused then because that's not my name.
Sensational. Sorry, Lisa Howard.
Which sensational. You know what? I have two names and I think we just leave it at that. Thank you very much.
Well, I mean, also,
I was going to say sensational for Benjamin Haldon for his triple High Rocks.
Set 3 races in 7 days, 3 podiums.
Yeah, that is very impressive. So we both had a very hybrid weekend. I did London Marathon and Ben did High Rocks. And obviously with my coach and the app and kind of what we love sharing to you guys is the hybrid lifestyle. And it's not saying that you need to be the elitist of the elite doing this. We just want everyone to have that functionality in their lifestyle to be able to do it, because we know how happy and beneficial it's made us. And then so many more people who are on the app and doing these programs and being a part of the community. And I think today we just wanted to talk about how to PB and do your very best in races. Because PB, by the way, is personal best. Americans say PR, personal record. Because some people wouldn't know what that acronym stands for. And the best thing about PBing is it's personal to you. Like you're not comparing it to every other person. You're looking at your previous time for High Rocks or a marathon or a race or running or whatever it is, and then comparing it to yourself. And that is realistically the only person you should be comparing to.
The good thing about doing events is that, especially like those sort of events where the format's the same, as you can compare to your previous. So we were just talking about before, that was only my second and third High Rocks that I did. Mm. But I had something to compare to from Manchester earlier on. And then I had a 12-week block of training to prepare for. And I just thought, I'm going to go for it. And then did doubles with Bill in Malaga the week before. Mm-hmm. Finished third in 55 minutes, 39 maybe, something like that. And then this weekend we did Berlin. Finished second, 53 minutes, 30 something. Got beat by 4 seconds, which is obviously frustrating, but the better team won. And then we last minute got entered into the relay team. And that was with me, Billy Blower, Jake Dearden, Jack Forsyth. And we won that by like country mile by like 3 minutes and 51 minutes something. So,
so
double podium weekend, which was great. And the reason why we're telling you about this is because a lot of the things that we practice is what we then put into programs for our members, so like guinea pigs. And it just goes to show that the things that we're doing work, and that's why the My Coach members love it, and why it doesn't matter whether you're starting from a position of you've never done anything before in terms of High Rocks or running, you can start on beginner programs and scale that throughout, because we've got programs to take you from any stage up into advanced program for competition as well. So again, there will be a link in the description if you want to check out the My Coach app. There will be, I think, a code in there as well, Carl.
Yeah, not so fit for a 7-day free trial on the app.
And on that, we also have the summer challenge, which is coming up as well.
Oh my God, we do. Carl, when does this podcast go live?
This one's going live this Monday.
So this Monday means you have 5 more days until enrollment officially opens for the 12-week till summer challenge. The 12-week till summer is definitely our most popular. And I think as well, it's kind of associated to, As soon as the sun starts coming out, life in Britain gets a little bit better.
So much better.
Doesn't it? Like, well, you enjoy training, you enjoy running outside, you feel safer running outside. You can do like some High Rock sessions here, there and everywhere outside running this. And it's, I think motivation increases, which is why people do actually like doing the summer challenge, because it finishes you in a perfect spot right before summer, hence the name 12 Week Till Summer. So if you hit the link below, it is the waiting list, which will give you 50% off your first month. There are so many different programs to choose from on My Coach that are tailored to you and your goals, request personalized calories and macros, check in on the app. So have check-ins, all your metrics, everything's logged. We have a whole new app and it fucking slaps. Bias because it's our own, but that is actually true from feedback that everyone has said. It is really, really fantastic. We've listened to you guys. So make sure you join the waiting list and just be notified.
Mm-hmm. Lovely little wrap up.
Thank you.
And yeah, we're going to go over some of the things today. I think we're going to start with when it comes to trying to PB for an event. So this is kind of going to be touching on an event such as a marathon or a half marathon or maybe even a high rocks, because the two will vary a little bit in terms of the way that you prepare, but there is some crossover. So we speak about peak week, or a lot of people call it like a deload week or a taper week. The purpose of this, especially for the marathon that you've been going into, is to reduce the amount of fatigue. And during this period of like a long prep, you've been beating yourself up for weeks. You've been really putting it down. You've been laying some miles in. And now in that period, you're not going to add any fitness. You're not going to add any fitness in the week before an event. And you're not going to get any quicker. You aren't going to better yourself if you're just going hard for race week, and you sure as hell can get worse. The way that I like to look at a taper week or race week is it's a little bit like having a battery. You've already built the size of your battery through that 12 to 16 week training block. That battery is not getting any bigger in that taper week. There's no point in trying to burn yourself out. The main thing to look at in taper week is with that battery is how much can I recharge it ready for race day?
Mm-hmm. I like that analogy.
Because otherwise you're going to pointlessly leak energy by putting it down too hard. And that's the best way that I can look at a taper week. You can't get any better, but you can get worse.
Yeah, I think definitely with taper as well, I definitely look at marathon running and high rocks differently. Because you tapering in general is reducing volume. It's overall for that whole week, maybe a tiny little bit less for high rocks. You gradually reduce the mileage for running, for example. But that taper week, it has to have intention. You can't just go lazy and not be thinking about your sessions just because the volume has decreased. And always, I think with marathon tapering off, I definitely keep some speed work in there because your volume does drop considerably. And when you're doing a marathon block, you'll probably run up to like a 34 kilometer run. Usually that is the highest people will go to, maybe pushing at a 36. And you that's like your peak training week is when you're doing this 34 kilometer run or whatever it is, and it's a really big mileage week. And then within 2 weeks, you're kind of, or 2 or 3 weeks, you're tapering off and the mileage can be like completely slashed in half and it feels really weird. And people get something called taper flu or phantom injury, where I didn't have this for London because I didn't actually taper off for London. I'll explain why after. But do you remember the 100K? Oh my God, the week of my 100K, I was like, I've got flu, I've got COVID, I broke my knee. Like phantom feelings of you are fucked. And it's mad. And I don't know why it happens. I don't know the science behind.
What happened the week of before Manchester High Rocks? Me, you and Meg?
We're all, Meg like had her quad all taped up. Like deep heat galore. I had calf sleeves, calf tape. And then yours was...
I wasn't even going to do it.
Yeah, Ben.
I was going to back out.
Ben was going to pull out.
My calf was so... We were all sat in the sauna all moaning about injuries. And then we were sat in the sauna making injuries up. It's just like this thing... This is the thing that's really difficult with tape week is it's such a head fuck. And I think the reason why it can also be a bit of a head fuck is because the input of other people can really throw you off. Mm. With taper week, don't allow other people to just chip in. That's old saying of... too many chefs can spoil the soup or this pot is really true, because what one person's taper week looks like might be completely different to that. And this is something that I've taken away from a physio specialist that we've seen in the past, is that some people's taper week, for me, for example, before the marathon, was I wasn't really doing anything towards the end of the week. I'd really tapered off. I'd have a shakeout run. Whereas Lucy, for example, will tend to run a little bit more and almost run through. And that's because from a mental perspective, you find it better to do so. The taper week, I would argue more than anything, is a mental battle more than it is a physical. As long as you're making sure that you and your legs are okay by the end of it, a lot of it is just dealing with that mental battle inside, because you're going from doing a hell of a lot of training to almost nothing.
Yeah, the reason why I didn't taper for London though is because I didn't do a marathon block. Like if London was kind of by itself, I definitely that week would have tapered off, reduced volume quite a lot. I didn't actually train legs. I don't train legs a couple of weeks out of a race. And I just kind of carried that on from the speed project. But because the speed project was only 2 weeks prior, I didn't know how to taper for London because there was kind of no gap. I just went straight into it. But I did have a rest day on the Friday and I did do a shakeout run on the Saturday before I ran and raced London Marathon on the Sunday. Like that is something I would always do, even if I was running through. I had like a couple of 8Ks the week of London, like speed work and things like that. But I would always do a shakeout run the day before. I think it's really interesting. Like people do it on different days. And again, that's something I always do it the day before. Always. I don't know why. I don't know the science behind it. I always do it in the morning, pretty much my start time of my race. I'll do an easy shakeout run the day before. Some people were doing shakeout runs on Fridays. I mean, oh my God, there was like 60 shakeout runs in London that weekend. Like every man and his dog was doing a shakeout run.
What's a shakeout run?
A shakeout run is just making the legs feel good, ready to run. You're usually full of a lot of energy a couple of days before you're going to race because you're probably carb loading. Mm-hmm. You're rested, you feel really good. And the shakeout run is to, I think, get rid of some of the nerves, get rid of some of the energy and just make the legs feel good. And you're just ticking over. I did a 5K. I wouldn't usually go over that, anywhere from a 3 to a 5K.
Yeah, I did 2 miles when I did mine.
Yeah, a 2 miler. And I think as Ben was saying before, you really just do have to like think what you want to do. As I said, there was so many shakeout run clubs happening and I was invited to, I think, like 12, and I just politely declined them all. I was like, I'm going to go by myself because a lot of these runs were at a pace that I was not going to run at. They were at like 6 minute or 6:30 Ks. And I was like, I'm going to do I just want to do my own run. I just want to enjoy it and like be in that moment before London because I was quite nervous. And never feel pressure to do these things and do things on different days just because like loads of people are doing it and it's off plan, and just honestly do whatever makes you feel good, like the couple of days before and coming up to it, because nobody was taking rest days for the team that I went with for London on that Friday. They all did a shakeout run, so I just met them for breakfast. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even an issue. So don't stress at all about what other people are doing.
Yeah, my protein did a shakeout run for High Rocks in Berlin. I didn't do it just because I prefer to do nothing the day before.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. And that's where everyone's different. And you will get a feel for other events and what works best for you after you've done a couple. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you can work off some of the tips that we'll give you today and hopefully they help in making a decision on what you think works best. But I've also jotted a couple of notes down on the weeks prior to that taper week as well, just kind of what you should do as a guideline for volume. So 3 weeks before, what I'd say is most people will start to drop volume from here, but we'll keep intensity. What that means is the actual amount of miles that you will run will decrease, but the intensity, or for example, the speed that you'll run it at, will remain the same, just because you want to keep constant in that pace that you're going to run mm-hmm. on the day. 2 weeks, you might reduce the volume further by up to even 20 to 30% of what you've just done in some of the peak, from some of the longer weeks. And again, keep some of the speed work in there just because you want to keep that pace in your legs. You don't want to completely take that out because you don't want to allow the legs to rest too much. And then you get to the event and you feel a bit jelly-legged because you've deloaded too quickly. And then like we've just been speaking about with the tape week, it's going to be very dependent on how you feel you are. But most people will tend to decrease volume by even up to 50 to 60% during that tape week, but keep up the frequency. So the splits in the amount of training days that you have in the first half of the week, you might still keep the same, but the volume is dramatically decreased as well.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Just on the side of running mileage as well, coming up to running races, again, this is very personal to how quickly you recover and how important, I guess, the race is to you. I did this for both. Well, actually, I did this for the speed project. 2 weeks out, I cut out all my lower body days. I stopped training lower body, which a lot of runners or people who train hybrid will do before a big race, just because of the fatigue on the legs. And that was an ultra, so we did need our legs for the marathon.
That's good. Need those legs. Don't take them off.
Yeah. And then, but for London, I think a week prior, I was still training legs. So I only did it a week that time, and it actually didn't make too much of a difference. I think just psychologically for me, it depends when you want to stop doing those lower body sessions. Or like, I didn't do a really intense high rock session the Sunday before because they wiped me out for like 3 days. And I thought, you know what, that is a little bit much, a week out of London Marathon. So you kind of just gauge, how well does your body recover? Like, should I train legs? Shouldn't, like, do upper body instead of legs? Like, you can still hit the gym, but just do upper instead of lower.
The thing that you've got to remember is that the stress and the fatigue that you put on your body, even from a weight session, DOMS can last up to 72 hours. So you got to think about the fatigue that you put on your body and how that can even still be affecting you 3 days later. So just important one to know. And then sort of comparing this to HYROX and what you were doing for that event, because it's a little bit different to running a marathon. Well, it's obviously different to running a marathon or half marathon, but even the setup will be slightly similar. Mm-hmm. But for example, my setup for the HYROX events is my training's pretty much the same up until the Wednesday. So I'm competing on the Saturday. My training's the same. So I'll have a hard session on Saturday, which will be probably either a double session or hard speed work in running. Tuesday might be like...
Monday, do you mean there?
What did I say?
Saturday.
Sorry, no, I said competing on Saturday.
Okay.
And I'll go back to Monday, so start of the week. Tuesday will either be conditioning or erg work or mixed with a bit of strength work. And then Wednesday will usually just be a strength session with sort of some specific stuff to HYROX movements. Mm. And then Thursday will be a complete taper day. So Thursday, all I'm doing is going through the stations that I'll do at HYROX, doing two sets on each for like 30 seconds at a lower intensity. Or I say lower intensity, sometimes I will work at race pace on some of the ergs just to practice, but it'll only be for 30 seconds. Mm. The workout will probably last 40 minutes. I'm not tired at all after the event. And then Friday, complete rest day. Saturday is race day. That's how I'll generally set up for HYROX. I guess it's kind of similar to marathon in terms of the amount of your taper and the volume, but everyone's will look different. That's just what I do for HYROX. And obviously HYROX is such a new sport. There's not as much data as there would be for a marathon on what's sort of a guide or what's optimal for going into a race event.
Yeah, we do ours very similar, I think, for HYROX. However, I would, if I was racing on Saturday, I would rest Thursday, do a shakeout run Friday, and then race Saturday. I just like a shakeout. Mm-hmm. Don't know what it is. It might just be a mental thing for a lot of people, but that's even me and Ben. We still have a very similar week, but there's certain things as the race approaches, we just tweak things a tiny little bit to suit what was preferable.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things to touch on within taper week, which is probably more important than anything, is sleep.
Yep.
We spoke about taper and stuff, but in terms of optimizing recovery protocols and tools, sleep is probably the most important one out of anything. When we're talking about recharging that battery, I would really be thinking about what plays into recharging that battery. So obviously reducing volume, but also trying to get not just more sleep, but optimal sleep. So doing things that and looking
get off your phone,
looking at things before you go to bed. So blue light from TV. Even if you want to get super anal about it, light above head. You want to try and keep lamps on.
Light above head.
You know, ceiling lamps. Yeah, not talking about fucking halos.
No, you missed out. You missed out a word.
Light above head.
Light above head. Probably, light above your head.
Probably northern there, wasn't it?
It's like that. Yeah, it's like that thing again. I have this. Light above head. All night now, but like, turn that light off above head.
Hey, you've added a word.
Have I?
What, off above head?
Light above head. Oh, God, sorry, move on.
Food. Don't eat too close before you go to bed because the stomach's got to digest that and the blood's going to be sent to the digestive system to work.
Yeah.
Again, too much water before bed. You don't want to be up all night like a racehorse.
It's me.
Pissing all night. So little things that you can, getting things ready for the morning so you're not stressing about things for the next day so you don't have to get up as early. All these little things just play into a better quality of sleep. Even room temperature, light or darkness, face masks. really helpful if you struggle to sleep, especially through the summer months where it starts to get hotter.
Do you know what's really interesting? So I've worn Whoop now for nearly 2 years and I absolutely love it. I try not look at my Whoop a couple of days out of an event. And I don't know if it's psychological. Like, I never really base it off how I'm feeling. Like, I'm always, if I'm red, something's gone wrong. Like, I'm ill. Like, I'm real, I can feel it. Yellow or green, I'm usually green. 3 days out, I was green all up until the marathon. And then 2 days out, I was yellow. And I thought, oh no, am I yellow? Do I feel yellow? I'm unsure. The day of, I said to Meg, I was like, I'm just not going to check it. But then it was a widget on my home screen and it was green. And I felt fucking amazing. But I think psychologically, if it was yellow, I'd have thought, oh, fucking hell, I'm yellow. It's really weird. Like, I've never done that before. But when I said to Meg, I was like, I'm just not going to check it because it's saying I'm yellow and I'm not. I feel groovy and green. I woke up on Sunday morning and it was a widget and it popped up and I thought, I'm green anyway. But do you know what I mean? Like, just don't always take it with a little pinch of salt on race day. Like, I definitely did feel 100% and it was at like 70%. So on the cusp of being a yellow girl that morning, and I wasn't psychological.
Stuff like that is a guidance, not a governance to what you're doing. So don't take it as the law.
Yeah.
Sometimes you look at your watch and I'll say, from today's session, you need 72 hours rest. No one's taking 3 days rest after a workout, are they? It's just not practical. Otherwise, you never end up training.
Yeah.
So you've got to take it with a pinch of salt. But for Berlin at the weekend was the first weekend I had on my Garmin where my HRV was balanced. Before that, remember how bad it was in Vegas?
Yeah,
even leading
really
up to Malaga, I was about to tell Bill that I'm not doing it because my recovery was so shit. Not just on the watch, but I felt terrible. Mm. Last weekend was the first weekend I went into it. Because Bill asked me, how are you feeling for this one? I said, fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I'm ready. And that's the other thing. We'll talk about it in a minute. I'm getting into a different topic. But yeah, felt really good. So recovery, doing the most of the things that you can do to charge that battery and whatever plays into that, do. Even supplementation can help with that as well. So make sure that you're properly hydrated. You're going to lose a lot of electrolytes and essential vitamins and minerals from sweating. So make sure that you, a couple of days before, get enough salt and electrolytes in to hold it, making sure you're properly hydrated. I really like to use creatine all the time. I like using taurine, mainly from a bad back. Not everyone needs that. But also beta-alanine is really good as well.
How do you say it?
Beta-alanine. But if you want to be more American, you say beta-alanine.
I said beta-alanine.
That's super American.
Beta-alanine. I do like that for recovery. One of the things I was going to say with salts is don't OD on salts. Like, it's important to have salts the day before and running up to a marathon or a high rocks the day of. I have a full sachet with 1,000 milligrams because I'm very used to having salts, and I think it's important for people to definitely have it the morning of a marathon or high rocks or whatever you do. And I had a little bit more, so I had just more than I'm used to. However, if you're not used to having 1,000 milligrams of sodium, and you're used to having 500 a day, don't suddenly have 2,000 the morning of, because you can saturate yourself and it'll actually cramp. It'll make you feel worse. You'll wee out and you'll piss out everything you've drank. So just be really careful that the pressure isn't like, oh, I need to have loads and loads of carbs. Like, there's a point of carb loading where you're at optimum. You don't push yourself over the edge where you feel like a fucking, like, log and you feel so heavy because you've overdone it on the carbs and you've overdone it on the salts and you've overdone it on everything because of the pressure of all these things being like sodium, salts, electrolytes, carb loading. Like, whoa, ground yourself a little bit and just don't.
Yeah.
It can get really overwhelming. So don't have too many, but have what is optimum for you. Have a little bit more. Don't have ridiculous mad amounts of carbs that you're not used to, but just have more than usual.
This is all fine tuning for the event. What, 50 years ago? People didn't even know what electrolyte was. People would turn up in the Converse and with a bottle of water and run the race. These are all things that have been layered on top that are just there for exactly what it says on the tin, supplementation. They're not the be-all and end-all. So don't think, oh, I haven't trained there all for the last 6 weeks, but if I take some electrolytes a couple of weeks before, I'm going to fly. No, you're not.
Yeah.
You need to put in the training, the basis first, to be able to then add that little bit on top and the icing on the cake to make the most of it. And that's where it's important. And I do the same for Hyrox. So I'll do those supplements that I was saying then. And then I will also do salts double a day before and then some the morning of. And then we'll also start using beetroot juice. So beetroot juice is a bit...
Beetroot is our new thing.
Well, I'll tell you an interesting story about the beetroot juice. The beetroot juice, there's some data to show that it helps buffer lactate. So obviously for a really intense race like Hyrox, where you're cooking a high heart rate, there's a lot of lactate buildup. It can be useful for that. But the first time I ever used it was for Malaga. And I finished the race and I went to the toilet and I was urinating red. And I came out and said to Bill, I'm going to have to go to the doctors, mate. He's like, what do you mean? I said, I'm pissing red. And he said, what do you mean? I said, I'm pissing red. I think I've pushed it that hard. I'm pissing blood. And he just looked at me like, what?
How did you figure it out?
I don't know. He was just talking. And then I think we got, he said, I did the same after such and such event. It could be, if you took beetroot? Yeah, took beetroot. There we go. Because it didn't sting. So bear in mind, if you take beetroot juice, you potentially will urinate red. It's not you're breaking down your internal organs because you push so hard. It's just the beetroot coming out.
Yeah. So you all also, I've been taking beetroot. I used to take it as a swimmer. So we're going back years and I started taking again daily. You can't just take one and be like, oh, wow, magic. Like, taking beetroot juice, you can get it in little shots and it can boost stamina and basically help you exercise for longer because it improves blood flow and it helps lower blood pressure. So everything's to do with, like, your heart rate and your stamina and how you're feeling. You can't just take one shot as Ben did in Malaga. He just had like a one singular shot. You have to do a, because then from then for Berlin, you had it for like a full 7 days. It's more so you take it. Did you not?
I just take it 2 or 3 days before.
Oh, no, you need to actually have the benefits of beetroot. I probably should have told you that.
Well, the podium says differently.
You need to take it. Well, you might have got that 4 seconds quicker.
There she is.
You do actually have to take it consistently. It's like creatine or beta-alanine. You can't just have one scoop and be like, fucking massive off my one scoop of creatine. It's got to saturate into your body. It's got to be something you're taking more consistently. I wouldn't take beetroot all the time. I'd take it around races, like 2 or 3 weeks around races, but definitely it does make your wee very purple. And also your poo is a really funky color. So just be aware that you probably don't need to go to the doctors. And if you are taking beetroot juice, it's not nice. It really doesn't taste well. But I think sometimes with things like that, it could be a placebo. Can't speak then. It could be a placebo to some extent.
But there's data to show that.
For sure there is. But you know what? I was taking it, I thought, I'm well fast.
You're not going to feel anything from it. It's like greens. It's just a foundation. You don't feel anything from it.
Yeah. It's not like, oh my God, I've taken this beetroot, so I am this fast or I can do these things. But I think, yeah, there's science there. And I think psychologically for me, it kind of locks me in. I'm thinking I'm in this 2 week block with beetroot juice.
The thing is though, if it's a placebo and it makes you faster, then happy days.
Yeah, exactly. Mate. Sure. There's data on that in terms of placebo as well, and giving athletes something that does absolutely nothing, but they think it does. So the placebo effect can be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to maximize the amount of placebo you can get into your life.
The one thing I always think about is, you know, in Harry Potter where he gives him the liquid look. And Ron goes in goal.
That's
and he plays
exactly
the match of his life. But he didn't actually have the liquid look. Harry didn't give it to him, but he just thinks he did. Mm-hmm. And he performs better because he's confident in himself that, you know what, I've got a bit of a boost for this workout.
What a good reference, Ben.
Yeah, that was a good reference. Sorry, also I just Googled. You can actually just drink beetroot juice daily and it helps like blood pressure and things like that. The ones we have are like the beetroot 400 nitrate, like that. I think they're specific sport ones, so they might have a higher concentrate of beetroot in. Whereas when you go to Tesco and get a thing of beetroot juice, you can probably drink that every single day. The ones we have are like these little shots of pure beetroot juice. Like it's really strong.
I just eat a lot of beetroot all the time anyway. I go through
like
almost a pack a day. I gave Carl one the other day because he was like, it tastes like mud, and I would 100% agree. But if you get the ones that are soaked in the vinegar, taste great. And they're very low calorie and it just adds to a meal. But I don't take the beetroot shots year round or week round like you do. because I just think it's expensive for not getting a lot of benefit. No issue if you like it, but I'm just thinking in terms of other people, I think there's a lot better places you can spend your money. I always think bang for your buck whenever it comes to supplementation that you're taking all the time.
Yeah, 100%. It's the same as do you know what is actually quite difficult? You know, this is probably a topic we're going to talk about anyway, like when you're actually racing, the nutrition of when you're racing. Was that a topic you had?
Peak week nutrition.
I'm not even peak week and I'm your racing.
Oh, well, let's reverse a little bit. Because the question that will often come in is around carb loading and carb loading the week of. And again, people can get this wrong, and it's actually one of the things that actually can really negatively affect your race or your event. So what is carb loading first? Carb loading is just a practice where runners or athletes will eat more carbohydrates leading up to the event to optimize the amount of glycogen that you've got in the tissue so you can utilize it during an event. And generally this will happen like sort of 2 to 3 days prior to the run or the race. And your split of carbohydrates will be a lot different. So it might be 55, 75% of your daily intake of calories will now be attributed to carbohydrates, and a small part will now move to fats and protein. That can be anywhere up to like 4.5 to 5.5 grams per pound of body weight, which sounds like a lot, and it is a lot of carbohydrates. However, don't get carried away with it. You don't need to start whacking in donuts and a shitload of sugar like you will sometimes see bodybuilders do in peak weeks when they're trying to really fire up and get a pump. You're not trying to do that. You don't actually need to move the calories for these carb loading days. And that's one of the common misconceptions. You just don't need to do it. You're actually decreasing the amount of training volume that you're doing. So you're now moving less. So you don't need more calorie expenditure within that window. You just need to increase the carb intake. So for example, if I'm on 2,800 calories all week, I'll still remain on the same as that. It's just the nutritional, the macros will just vary a little bit in terms of percentages and the way that they're broken up in order to carb load for the actual day of the event.
Yeah, I think this is what we said before with carb loading. You don't want to overdo it, because you kind of get to that stage where you've had so many carbs or you've overdone it, and then I get tired. Like you just get feelings of not 100% how you actually want to be feeling. But it is massively important that you are getting the right amount of. I mean, I didn't weigh anything before London. I didn't track macros. I don't track macros. I can eyeball what I'm eating and how it's making me feel. A really easy way to carb load that I was doing, and I thought this was really interesting, orange juice throughout the day, because it has a high carbohydrate content. Yeah. And also a Mars bar has 36 grams of carbs, did you know? 36 grams of carbs in a Mars bar. And I, as Ben said, don't slash in loads of food that isn't actually, you don't usually have. Isn't going to sit well on your stomach. Keep things really consistent. So I always have pasta and I always have Nando's. So at Nando's, I know it sits well in my stomach for races. I'll just get more of the hummus. I'll get mash and sweet potato wedges. The hummus pitta.
Yeah, but hummus is way high in fat.
Yeah, I just meant the pitta hummus dip thing. Delicious. But I wouldn't go somewhere like Pizza Express and just whacking a pizza, because
some people will, and that's what I can throw you off.
Or that would really throw me off, because my stomach isn't used to it. It's not something I eat all the time.
Say that for after.
Yeah, have a fucking pizza after. Delicious. I mean, if you usually have pizza before, for sure. Like I usually have pasta, or a Nando's, but just trying what you'd usually have. Don't throw your stomach off and your bowels before you're racing by having really just mad new foods that you would not usually have in your diet, like your bagels, your toast, your banana, your orange juice, your Mars bars, your Nando's, your things like pasta, rice. You'd usually have them, so keep them in that week and in the days running up to your race.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing, is don't swap the carb sources. If you are having pizza roll every day, then have that before the day you race and carb up on that, but don't change the food sources. This is where it can really mess people over with digestion in your gut if you're then changing things up. And I actually made this mistake before Malaga. I told the coach that I was working with this. I started having a lot more oats. And if you know me at the moment, I have a lot of steak and fruit for breakfast. Mm-hmm. Fruit, for me in terms of carbohydrates, just sits a lot better on my stomach. So I just switched back to doing that straight away. Oats really upset my stomach, so went back to what I was already doing, continued with getting more fruits in to help increase my carb intake. And the difference with the Hyrox is when it comes to food intake is that you don't need to carb up for as much. Like it's a 60-minute event to like, it depends if you're doing singles, doubles, well. So like it can be anywhere from obviously...
an hour to 2 hours.
Yeah, depending on where your levels are. And most of the time, like you don't need as much carb up as you'd need for a marathon because you're not moving for anywhere near as long. So what I tend to do is keep everything the same up until Wednesday. Thursday, I might introduce a bit more carbs. And then Friday, sort of 60 to 70% of my day will be carbohydrates instead. And the other thing to remember is when you do this, especially for a half or a marathon, is you probably are going to weigh a little bit more. So don't weigh yourself. When you do a carb up, you're going to hold more glycogen, you're going to hold more water. So don't start worrying and think, oh shit, now I'm another 3 pounds heavier from the race that I've got to carry around. A lot of it will come off during the race. So don't worry. I remember feeling like this for the London Marathon last year. I was like, I feel quite heavy, but I feel really good because I had a lot of energy from carbing up. Saying that again, when it comes to Hyrox, you don't need to do as much of it because you actually don't want to be carrying a load of glycogen and water because you want to be a bit lighter and nimble because you're running a lot quicker pace.
Yeah, I mean, I had a question actually the other day saying, what gel should I take for Hyrox? And I thought, none. I'm confused. But that wasn't the right answer. It's, I would never personally have a gel, I don't think, for Hyrox unless I hadn't had breakfast or I didn't, like I have quite a substantial carby breakfast before races, before Hyrox, before marathons, before running, like toast, banana, honey or oats or whatever it would be. So I'm usually carved up before I race and that should last me the full hour. If you're maybe running over, potentially you could have a gel halfway round. Most gels have 20 grams of carbs per gel. You could have one in your sports bar, for example. So I don't think necessarily for Hyrox you should be stressing too much about gels and going around with what you're doing. However, for a marathon, your carbohydrate intake is, I think, make or break for sure when you're running a marathon.
Well, there's a reason why they hand gels out for free as you're doing a marathon and they don't hand them out at Hyrox.
Mm-hmm. Now, with marathons, it's very individual how you wish to take your carbs. I choose gels. I think gels are an easy carbohydrate source. Some people take it in the sachets and they drink their carbs. But then obviously you carry water and you do different things. It depends what you want to do. But you should be consuming 30 to 60 grams of carbs per hour for the first 3 hours of your marathon and then increasing it to 60 to 90 grams of carbs per hour after that. Now, for London, and this is a strategy that I'd never tried before, and it was the best strategy that worked for me. I'm not saying this is the thing that everyone should do, but a few people had told me they had done this before marathons and it had worked really well for them. I had a really high carb gel. It was 40 grams of carbs per sachet. And that is pretty high. I had a gel every single 30 minutes. So at the 30 minute marker, hour and a half, 2 hours. And then when I clock watch, I thought, fucking hell, I'm closer to 3 hours than I am 3.5 hours. I had one at 20 past the second hour and then 10 to, because I knew I didn't have as much time left. So I kind of calculated that as I was running around. But even when it got to like the fourth gel in, I was like, oh, this feels a certain type of way. You know, you just feel a bit sicky having it. Thank God I forced those gels down. I had the full thing. So I was getting 40 grams of carbs every single half hour. And what you have to remember is the faster you go, the sooner your glycogen stores will deplete. So if you're fucking pounding pavements, you're going to run out of glycogen quicker than if you're not going as fast. Yeah. And fast and slow is relative to you as an individual. You know what feels fast to you as a person. And I just think it worked really well. So I had six gels throughout London Marathon and it just saw me through. Like I got stronger, a negative split, if anything. And I'm not saying it is just the gels. I will give myself a little bit of credit.
A lot of credit.
But compared to Chester, where I actually only took my first gel in Chester at 50 minutes, was a complete fuck up because I was already depleted of glycogen by the time I took it. So you want to, before you've depleted your glycogen stores or even feel in the realm of, oh, I'm feeling a little bit of something, you already want to have had that gel. So by having a set nutrition strategy that even when you're running, don't change it. I obviously tweaked it a little bit because I ended up running 15 minutes faster than I thought I would. So I had to tweak it to get them all in. But don't just like, oh, do you know what? I don't feel like one yet. If your time is saying gel or carbs or drink or food or however you get those carbs in, stick to the strategy.
Be proactive with it. Don't, because you can easily set yourself up to win, but you're not going to get yourself back from a hole. Like once you've dug it, putting a gel back in your system isn't going to get you out of it. You've already put yourself in that place. So it's difficult to pull yourself back from bonking or being in that hole. And the other thing is Lucy also tested the gels in training runs. So make sure you do that. Don't just go up on race day and be like, oh, this is a new gel that my mate recommended. And then it makes you shit yourself.
Yeah.
Not ideal. So make sure that you trial a couple of different gels, see what works well for your stomach pre-event day.
Yeah, because it's also hard because they were giving out
Lucozade gels.
And I thought, oh, I'm not going to... I mean, I did have all my gels on me. I had a pack and I could carry them all. I was not going anywhere near those Lucozade gels. They were actually, regarding water, every time there was a water station, I was sipping it. And I saw Meg twice to get a big... with salts. They were giving out like little cups of Lucozade, which I was also having because I thought that's fine. Yeah. I can do that on race day. Lucozade, I know I'm good with Lucozade. That's not an issue. It's just sometimes when they give out specific gels that you've never had. Because at Chester, I just was grabbing them all because I was like, I'm absolutely fucked. But I'd gone past the point of a gel's going to help me at all.
Yeah.
It would do nothing except make me want to cry and shit myself.
Mm. Should we talk nutrition on the morning of the event? Because I think that's another thing it's important, but also not
well important for a marathon.
Not pivotal. And what I mean by that is a lot of the carb loading should have been done prior. If you waking up and going, oh, I'm just going to carb load this morning, you're probably in a bit of a bad place. So again, the main thing, even more so than the past couple of days now, is make sure that you have something that you would usually eat in the morning anyway in terms of carb source. So if you're used to having oats, have those oats and get them in your system. For someone like me, doing that would wreck my stomach. So what I had to do when I was in Malaga is I used, I don't know why it just works better, is those, you know, the big jumbo oats?
Yeah.
With cold milk. I don't know why it worked well with banana and fruit. It just worked for me. But do have something that you know works. That might be a bagel. It might be
toast,
bread, pancake, whatever it is, get your carb source in that you know sits well in your stomach. Do that and don't add other stuff in. The other thing as well is don't go too heavy on it. I saw people doing it for Hyrox and they're like full packs of Haribo and like a full banana loaf of Saurine. I was like, don't think you need to carb load that much to the point where you're making yourself sick, because you need to get a balance. And on that of making yourself feel sick, make sure that you're having it, if it's a Hyrox event, make sure you're having it 2 hours before. I was on super early on Saturday, I was on it 8:10, which meant I needed to finish that first meal by 6:10. I was up early to have it. Same for a marathon, try and get in 2-3 hours before, so it's not sploshing around on your stomach whilst you're trying to get into the race. Because the other thing that will also make your stomach a little bit upset, and everyone gets it, and we're going to go on to that, is nerves.
Yeah, I think also as well, you don't really necessarily want to be having like sweets and things too much before your race, because they're fast acting carbs. You want medium acting carbs, you want the breads and the oats and things that are going to settle in within 2 hours. So I had breakfast like a good 2.5 hours before bagel, toast. Actually, for London, you know what I did? And this, I bought a pack of bagels, again, cinnamon raisin bagel, banana honey, all day, every day, full one, love it. That's it. I could not eat the bagel. I was in the room and I was like gagging because I had no toaster and it was just
dry.
The whole thing was putting me off. And I was like, I started to panic a bit. I was like, I can't eat that, Meg. I was like, it's literally making me want to be sick. And I tried to nibble it.
Gagging on a dry bagel.
Yeah, it was really unwell. So went downstairs and I just said to the guy, I was like, actually, Meg did. She was like, have you got any just toast? And I just had toast with butter at the Hoxton where we were staying. So I went down, I got two massive pieces of sourdough with butter. I'd obviously bought my own honey and banana and I just had that. So that wasn't a big change. That was just having from a bagel shape to bread. But there are certain things, like a lot of hotels sometimes don't have kettles. So if you don't have a kettle in your room and you want oats, bring a little portable kettle with you. Like there's these things that you don't really think of.
Or you can go to the hotel breakfast and just pick up toast and
Or just if your pick hotel up. Has it. Yeah, yeah, 100%. But yeah, that threw me off a little bit because I said to Meg, I was like really gagging trying to eat this bagel and I like nibbled at it and we had to just pivot and be like, okay, I can still get my carbs in the same way. It just needs to be bread.
This is where me and you are a little bit different again, and it's nothing wrong with that. When it comes to pre-events, you will take all of your stuff, like your food and stuff as well, ready because you know what you're going to have in the morning. Whereas I'll just go to Malaga and I'll just go down to the breakfast thing and go, okay, I'll pick that up because I know that sits well in my stomach. Again, it depends what type of person you are. Again, we've had this conversation with Harry Akins. He's the type of person, even for an Olympic athlete, who will have a McDonald's before he runs because his digestive system is okay with that. And it means that anywhere in the world before an event, he can pick what, you know, he can pick a McDonald's up and that works for him. And he doesn't get too stressed if he then can't have the thing that he thinks psychologically he needs. Because some of it can be psychological. You think everything's not in place, that means I'm going to fail. It's just that people have different types of mindsets when it comes to things. And that's where me and you a little bit different. Doesn't mean that someone's right or wrong. Just, again, finding what works for you.
Yeah, I think that's why I like Nando's. Because I know, I mean, to be fair, I race abroad a lot. What did I have for Lanzarote? Where did we eat? I think we went tapas. And I was having loads of just random...
What's that called? Bravas?
Random food. Tapas bravas. But like, that was completely different food than what I'd usually have.
Yeah, you're good there, to be fair.
Because I've done... And then, Vegas, to be fair. There's been a lot recently that I've been well different because you don't have Nando's abroad.
I always say just do the best or make the best decisions that you can at the time. If you can place that on... Friday night before the High Rocks, we went to a Vietnamese and I had a sort of potato and rice curry.
Yeah,
the curry wasn't like a super stodgy thing. That was really light and it was basically just a bit of chicken, potatoes and rice. So that was really easy. Just coming back to your sugar quote before, in terms of smashing Haribo, the time on the weekend that I actually did smash in about 3/4 of a pack of Haribo is I had the doubles in the morning, then we got entered into the relay. Between that, I was... gone. And the thing you need to remember after a big event like that is your body's burning through glycogen even post event really quickly, so it needs to get quick sugars in just to top glycogen stores back up for the event. So I did use a lot of those quick sugars then as well. And like we've been referring to then, the other thing I want to discuss is nerves. Nerves pre-event, how you cope with those, how you deal with it, because everyone gets it. It doesn't matter whether it's your first or your 50th, people still get nerves. I still get nerves. Even the top athletes get nerves. I was watching some people at Hyrux at the weekend who I know performed a lot of times, and people were doing up laces, hands are shaking.
Hyrux, honestly, I think the start of Hyrux is fucking awful.
It is
it's
intense.
It's like you're in this pen, and it's like 10, 9.
They always play that John Cena song.
And like you're in this pen thinking, this is well scary. Like I get.
Cal,
on
can we,
the start
if
of
people
Hyrux,
haven't seen it, flick up a video of even me and Bill just before the Malaga or the Berlin one, and
you
will understand. And you've got to wrestle through all these people to try and get to the front if you want to get to the front.
I thought you did really well. The speed you two took off at Berlin was incredible.
That was a bit mad though. Went before the buzzer.
If you're not cheating, you're competing. That's not the ethos. But you shouldn't really go off that quickly. That is just because if you're on an event like High Rocks, which gets super congested, if you want to get away from the crowds and... But I always have this little motto, again, do not follow this. This isn't advice. This is just us being stupid. The first one to ski egg wins.
Do not do that though.
But it helps you get clear a little bit, and it almost also creates a psychological battle with the people that are behind you because they're trying to catch you up, and you've got a bit of an advantage first. But you need to have the fitness level there to then be able to deal with it. When you can't sprint to the ski egg and then gas out.
I think if you're really competitive with High Rocks, like you do want to get out front. Like me and Meg don't own as many races as we can. The girls do it. Like it's just. Because running with a clearer path is better. And then, yeah, getting to the ski erg first is always, or like relatively up there, is like a nice thing to do.
Yeah, because when I did the relay, there was a guy who got in front of me and I was chasing him. Mm. And there's a little bit of a cyclist thing there because you're like, I've got to catch up now.
Yeah, you want to catch
up. But then I just almost ripped the handles off the ski erg and finished in front of him for the.
Yeah, don't follow that tactic. Yeah. That's just
in the relay, you can't. If you do a relay, that's the thing, by the way, sorry to go off topic. The relays are really fun to do in High Rocks. And if you've never done one before and you're thinking even doubles might be a bit much, relays are a really fun thing that you can do with four friends with little pressure, and it's only two stations. So it's good fun.
I'd keel. I'd absolutely feel I'd go to the deaths there. Yeah. What would be my stations?
So I did the two ergs. That's no joke. It was funny because the guy next to me said to me at the event, he's like, I knew you were ripping it because your whole ski erg was wobbling as you were going through it. Yeah.
You probably weigh more than most people who are doing.
Yeah, yeah. But everyone says to me afterwards, even when we finished Malaga and Blaine, I can't believe someone your size moves that quick. The only downside to that is it does batter my body a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I'm heavier, but...
I don't know what I'd do. It depends.
We don't fit in pigeonholes around here.
No, someone actually asked me before, would you ever just focus on running and go for a sub-3-hour marathon? I was like, never ever would I just focus on running, because then I'm not hybrid. I'm a runner. Like, I'm not... That wouldn't make sense to me. Like, I like having the muscle. I like doing those things. I was like, I will do my sub-3 exactly how I look right now. Mm-hmm. I was like, it'll be well... Like, that is hard for sure with, like... If I was just running, it would be, I think, a lot easier. But I don't want to do that.
It's super
impressive. That's not the point of it.
One of the most impressive things I saw last year was Nick Bear run a 2:39 marathon. People don't understand how impressive that is for, I'm going to refer to him as an object, for an object of that weight to move at that pace is insane.
Mm. Insane. I think, do you reckon... You know, like relative to height and body weight and like girl or guy, do you think I'm similar? You know, because you look at Nick and he's so big and tall, whereas I'm a woman and I'm smaller in height, but I'm like 65 kilos.
I think it's probably similar. I think you would need to be a couple of kilos heavier because he is, remember for the Speed Project. Heavy. And I, for those who follow Nick Bear, you see him on camera and you see him on video. When you see him in real life, he is just a dense human being.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of muscle, especially on his legs. I don't know how he moves that quick with legs that big.
He's just strong. He's strong. That's the thing. And I just, I don't, also that person who asked that question did not mean bad by it. I think they were just curious to be like, would you run? I thought, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Like, no way. God, if I was just running, you best believe I'm going for a fucking Olympic qualifying time. If I'm just doing one sport, I would become a marathon. Like that would be it. But that's not, it's not for me.
Okay. Tips for dealing with race day nerves and sort of feeling anxious?
It depends how well you deal with pressure. I don't at all. I don't like added pressure, saying like people, you're going to get a specific time or you're going to do this. Some people really like that and it's like fuel to their fire. I might be slightly differently because we do work on social media, you know, when you, even if you don't know, if you voice a time to friends and family, like, oh, I want to hit this time. And I did that for Chester, and anyone can do this. For some people, it will massively increase the nerves because you've then put it out there to the rest of the world. Nick is a great example. He said to the world he's going to do a sub 2:45 marathon. Like, he said it to the world, whereas I have a very different approach. I kind of said, oh, I want a PB. In my head, I wanted sub 3:12, but not a single... I don't think I told you that. Maybe I did. I don't know. I don't think I did. I was like, I just want a PB. So I was trying to take off the external pressure to help with my nerves, because from experience, I'm not that good with pressure and I do get really, really nervous and I think I'm going to let people down or something's going to happen. So I kind of keep my personal time goal to myself. Me and Med did it at High Rocks. Nobody knew realistically what me and Meg wanted to achieve. We said around a 62. Bear in mind, we wanted to go sub hour, but we didn't want to put the pressure on it to do that. And that's just the way that I deal with nerves a little bit better. However, saying that, when I go for a sub 3-hour marathon, it's going to be a whole thing. Like, so that will be if I fail that, we support that failure. Mm-hmm. And you just, you can't, before High Rocks, it will be nerve-wracking. I think those pens are like a little bit nerve-wracking. Before marathons, the same thing, you're shuttered into this start wave. At the end of the day, you've done the work and there's not really anything to be nervous about. Like, you're racing your best race. You've put in the effort. You've put in the time. Sometimes when you've not put in the effort and you've not done a full training block, nerves can be a little bit higher because you're a bit in limbo and you're unsure how it's going to go. But that's just how I deal with it. I kind of just, I keep things to myself. I tell myself some real strong, I'm not an affirmation girls, but you best believe on race day, I am full of affirmations. I'm like, I am strong. I am fast. You can do this. You're amazing. You've put in the work, to myself, not to the public. Internally, it calms me down quite a lot. Focusing on breathing and just, yeah, just pulling yourself in, being like, you're going to enjoy it. It's going to be a whole lot of fun out there.
Yeah, I think that definitely helps. We speak about this thing of how the voice that you'll hear most in your life will be your own. So make sure it's one that lifts you up, not puts you down. Mm. I think having those affirmations and that gratitude on race day definitely helps you build a character that you want to become. You also mentioned there about if your training program hasn't gone to plan, that can sometimes make you anxious as well. I mean, I did for the London Marathon, had a really bad training block because I got injured and then didn't really do much running for the 4 weeks before. What I'll say for that is, for me, it actually took a lot of pressure off because I was going into the race thinking I'm not going to get the time that I wanted to hit because my training's not gone to plan. So I actually took a lot of pressure off, and going into it, I wasn't as bothered if I didn't hit the time that I'd originally said that I wanted to hit. So I did actually get really close to the time that I wanted to hit, but I felt less pressure because of it.
Yeah.
So swings in roundabouts, that one. The other thing is to kind of think about your warm-up. You could, because a warm-up pre-event can almost be like a bit of a flow state where you're starting to get into the event. You're thinking about the things that you need to do to make sure that your body's prepared rather than thinking about the actual race. And sometimes that can just bring the heart rate down a little bit and relieve a little bit of that pre-race anxiety. The other thing to think about is just sort of asking yourself, why? Think back to when you signed up for the race. Why did you sign up for the race? Why are you here? Ask yourself that question, especially if you've got a race day coming up soon. When you're there, when you're in amongst it, ask yourself, why am I here? And hopefully it's because you think, I want to challenge myself. I want to do something difficult. I wanted to try and train for this. I've done it. I put myself in this uncomfortable environment. I'm one of a very small percentage who will take part in this kind of event and complete it. So ask yourself why, and it'll usually and hopefully fill you with some kind of content that you've probably overcome the hardest part in the training. Showing up and doing the event is just ticking a box. Mm. You've done all the hard work already. So now just go out and enjoy it. And I think that can help sometimes. It's something that I often try and think about as well. The other thing for me, and I know other people will do it, is comparison. And this is difficult again when it comes to social media, because bodybuilders, marathon runners, whatever event it is, never had anyone that they could see who was maybe in their race or putting up times or looking at Strava in the build up to a race. It would just be focused on them. Whereas now we have information all around us from people who are running such and such a time and this time, and getting messages from people like, oh, you could do this pace.
Yeah, that is fucking well
annoying. Don't never compare to other people. And this is the beautiful thing about doing these sorts of races, is that the only thing that you're trying to beat is the time that you got last time.
Yeah, 100%.
So try and focus it on the successes that are about to come up rather than the potential failures that might come. Because at the end of the day as well, nerves are actually a good thing. There's been a lot of data and a lot of research and evidence to support that nerves and a slight amount of stress is actually good for performance. So having a little bit of nerves there is good.
Yeah.
If you completely don't give a shit, it's you're probably too laid back. So having a little bit of nerves there is actually a really good thing. So are we going to say something?
No, I was just going to say, you know, when you speak about races coming up, I'm just thinking, I got butterflies in my stomach now. Like, isn't the weird butterfly feeling really weird? Like, I had it the 3 days running up to London. Like, I was actually more excited, I think, than I was nervous. But just allow those feelings to be there. Like, don't try and suppress them and feel like you're going to have butterflies, and it's a weird feeling. But yeah, don't think it's completely wrong and bad to have this adrenaline and have these nerves.
We spoke about this episode being around how to PB for next event. Of course, all this comes in fundamentally to the training block that you've done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we provide with the MyCoach app, is making sure that you have a proper training plan. And I spoke to a few people about this because a lot of people have asked questions about, if I want to do well at HYROX, if I'm doing my first HYROX, what would your main piece of advice be? And it would be stick to a plan. Yeah. Especially for a HYROX event, you can't just practice the 8 stations in the gym and then tag a bit of running on and think, this is going to be enough. Because I'm telling you now, as someone who's done that, it will leave you underprepared. The best thing that you can do is stick to a training program and trust it, because it will help you become a far better participant or an athlete in it if you follow it to the T, and it'll give you a lot more confidence, especially if it's a program that is tried and tested.
I think the same with any of them, though, like marathons, half marathons, HYROX, 10K, 5K, whatever it is. It also keeps you going. Like motivation will 100% drop for sure during a marathon prep, during a HYROX prep, like whatever you're doing. Like, it's just not normal that your motivation is going to be absolutely buzzing every single day and you've got some hard sessions. But by having a program, being like, well, I've no other choice. Like, this is what I've got to do today. So I'm going to go out and I'm going to get it done. It's easier than kind of not following anything, because if you're not following anything, you won't do it.
Yeah.
Like you just won't do it.
And just to finish up, Carl asked a valid question before. Mm. What do you do if you don't PB? Because people often prepare for weeks and months of training to PB a race. And PB in a race, by the way, doesn't mean that you're trying to set new world records. It just means your own. There's a reason why it's called personal best, because it's your time, not anybody else's. So if that doesn't happen, first of all, you've got to just digest it and accept it. And then what you do is you can look. The good thing about racing, whether it be a run, I'm going to reference a HYROX, is that you get all the data back post-event. Yeah. So for a HYROX, you can look at all the stations and all the runs and you can go, okay, this happened there. This happened on the ski erg, and this is why they made this transition on the rower was poor. This run that we did later on the race, we were obviously a lot more tired, so we need to work on our endurance a little bit more, maybe do a bit more zone 2 running in the next block of our training. It's that data is the key to your next success. Failure leaves evidence, and if you're willing to look at that evidence and that hard data and go, okay, this is what I can now draw upon for training for it next time, you will hit a PB next time. So it's, don't worry, there's lots of athletes who go in with that intention, and things might have not worked for you on the day. Nutrition might not have been good in the build-up, but again, it's living and learning.
Yeah, I think you learn the most from those failures for sure. I would not have taken 6 gels or 7 gels, whatever I had, in London, I didn't bonk in Chester.
Mm-hmm.
So you do learn really valuable lessons. I think it's nice, as you said at the start, PBs are personal to you. It's your personal best. It's not anyone else's. It doesn't matter what anyone else is getting. It is personal to you and your race. So fingers crossed. Oh my God, I thought I was going to, that was too many. No, I don't know what happened there actually. Hopefully this episode has inspired you and motivated you in some way for your next race, whatever it is. Don't forget about the 12 Week Till Summer Challenge waiting list is below. And then also...
It's not the waiting list live now, isn't it?
No, it's the waiting list.
Sorry, guys. Ignore me.
I am the dates gal. And don't forget that the code NOTSOFIT will give you 7 days free on the app to try it out and test it out. Obviously, we are the official partner, digital partner for HYROX, which is super cool. And you do have access to some of the best coaches in the HYROX space. And Ben also will have a program coming out very, very soon, which is exciting.
I'm going to do more testing first, though.
I'm
not one of those people who likes to just like do something and then go, oh, I'm now the fucking best at doing this just because I've done something well. I like to...
Yeah, try and test it.
Yeah, I like to do like a couple of the ones. I've got a solo coming up in London. I want to do that. I want to learn more about myself, learn more about the space, and then move further into it. Or I might just fuck it off and never do it again.
Well, I will bring out another program. No. And stay subscribed on Spotify, YouTube, comments, everything like that. Reviews, we love to see it. Massively helps the podcast. If it's one thing you can do today from listening to us, we appreciate it more than you know. And we will see you in next week's episode.
Bye, guys.
Bye.